I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Voters in Orlando's 5th District chose Regina Hill to replace 16-year Commissioner Daisy Lynham. Hill defeated Lynham's son, Juan Lynham, after a bruising election campaign. I'll speak with the Commissioner-elect about her plans for the district that's about to see huge change through development. And later in the program, the Florida legislative session wrapped up with a $77 billion budget being passed. I'll speak with 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry about this year's legislative session and the election season to come. That's ahead on Intersection. Regina Hill takes over Orlando's District 5 City Commission seat from Daisy Lynham. Commissioner Lynham held the seat for 16 years before announcing she was stepping down and that she would support her son, attorney Juan Lynham, in his bid for the seat. Hill defeated Juan Lynham in a runoff election last week. I spoke to Regina Hill about the challenges she faces in the district. She began the conversation by talking about new venues and the job opportunities they present.
We have the Sportsplex that the Magic are getting ready to invest over $200 million in. We've also have the soccer stadium, as you said, Create a Village. We've also just got word that UCF is putting a campus down in the Paramore area. And I really don't see those things as challenges. I see those as opportunities for the district and for the people of Paramore with jobs, with housing, with now getting transferable skills through apprenticeship programs and vocational training. But yes, we are worried about being gentrified, of course, with progress and it being there right now. Over 4,000 people in the last 6 years have been moved out. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure this time that we remain there, that we're included. So that's going to be one of the challenges, making sure that the people of District 5, like you said, not just Paramore, because it's District 5 encompass Ivy Lane, Mercy Drive, Sunset, where the Citrus Bowl is being now renovated. So that's another thing to tackle, that we're included in that process. Mm-hmm. That the homes, affordable homes that Creative Village offer, other homes that are going to be built. You got the Concord Project. That I'm not against inclusion and others coming to our neighborhood, but that we also benefit from all these different packages. So that's going to be my challenge, to make sure we don't get left behind and that the people are served.
Do you have some ideas at this stage of how you're going to balance those competing needs?
Well, I've already had meetings. I've met with Kay Rollins over at the Orlando Soccer Foundation, which she represents her husband, Phil Rollins. I've met with Lucas Boyce there. He's a representative there at the Orlando Magic that will be spearheading all these different projects. I believe in community building. Mm-hmm. So I've already started to build relationships with these organizations that are going to impact that district in a mighty big way, to where they've made promises that they're going to make sure that the people get jobs, that there's going to be housing available for those individuals and residents there of District 5. Mm-hmm. They're going to assist with apprenticeship programs. So I can only, hold people accountable, like the voters that elected me are going to hold me accountable to make sure that the things that I said that I want to advocate in their behalf for, that I do that. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm only one commissioner. I don't make all the decisions on the board. It's going to be commissioners and the mayor, that I create a good working relationship with them and advocate in the residents' behalf to let them know what our desires and what our needs are. And I'm hopeful. I'm just like the residents are. I'm hopeful that through working with them and letting them hear the residents' voices, that they have compassion. Mm-hmm. Not saying that there hasn't been any compassion, but there has been some neglect, that this time that we are not just politicians, but servants of the people and caregivers. I live on the outskirts of Paramore now in District 5, but I came here to Orlando from Tavares at 8 years old, and I've seen a lot of changes. And then I've seen things that haven't happened for the people of District 5. You know, there's still homelessness. There's still high jobless rate. Children aren't graduating like other districts. You know, I think there's a 53% dropout rate. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't have GEDs or high school diplomas.
I mean, those are some pretty big, as you say, mighty challenges, mighty changes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot to kind of get your hands around.
Yes, it is. The average household income there in District 5 is right at $13,000, higher than the national poverty rate.
That is staggering.
It's staggering, exactly. So, yeah, it's some major issues there. And as I stated, I don't think I have to recreate the wheel because there is almost another $1 billion that's going to be spent right there. And if we make sure that we're working with the Board of Education, I've spoken with our person that represents us, Kat Gordon. Mm-hmm. We're going to be building a K through 8 school there in the Paramore area.
When's that going to happen?
I think it's going to get off the ground next year. I don't have the exact dates. I have to get back with you on that, but it has been proposed, and I think it's going to be passed. They're pretty excited about that.
That is exciting.
Yes, we have a community stakeholder. I haven't met with them, but I'm excited about it. Harry Rosen. Mm-hmm. And if you know Harry Rosen, he's the hotel magnate. But what he did over in Tangelo Park is phenomenal. What he did was started with the child care, making sure that the parents were able to get child care so they can get jobs and education. And then he guaranteed every student over there that graduated a college scholarship. And it's been he's now getting ready to invest in the children of Paramore.
You talked a little bit about some of the challenges of the race. It wasn't a very congenial race, let's just say that. I mean, your opponent spent quite some time talking about your past arrests, and you were very public in saying, well, I've put that behind me. But how damaging was that?
Well, no one wants to be branded as a career criminal.
Sure.
At most, I did have a felony, my felony in 1989, right after coming home from the military. And, of course, Paramore at that time was infested with crack cocaine. There was a lot of drugs and money. Being, like I said, raised there in Paramore and coming back home, I was indigent. Start dating a guy that was a drug dealer there. And he was busted by the cops, and I was with him. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a drug dealer, nor was, you know, it was, I had drug possession. That's what the story read. I had a $20 mark bill in my pocket. So, of course, I have to take responsibility for knowing I was, you know, participating in criminal activity. And I was a co-defendant. And the majority of my other charges were missing court, driving with suspended license. If anything, I'm not a career criminal. I was at that time and throughout a habitual traffic offender. Mm-hmm. So most of those were misdemeanor traffic offenses. But I didn't want to at that time. And now I do think that I owe the listeners and the voters an explanation of why, what it was that I did. I was negligent on going to courts at times. Getting there late and had to go to jail, turn around and come back to court, those type of issues. It was never guns or violence or anything to harm someone. It was more so me being slackful and not organized and harming myself. But thereafter, I've became a nurse. I'm a nurse of 23 years. I've only had 2 jobs in the last 23 years, 13 years at Orlando Regional Medical Center, and now going on 11 years on my current job here in Winter Park, where I work in the homes. So I'm a second vice commander of veterans at ANVETS Post 30. I sit on a government board at Orange County. I also sit on a board with the Urban League. I also work with Serenity Gift of Love, which monthly I provide clothing and food to the homeless. I work with Girls Standing Together at WRCC, which is the Women's Coalition on Colonial. So I'm a community activist caregiver. I work tirelessly in the Democratic Party with all of their causes. So, you know, to brand me as this person that wasn't worthy to serve, I've been serving for a very long time in the community. Mm-hmm. And people knew that, you know, it was, but I understand politics.
Yeah, you must have expected that that would come up, I suppose.
Oh, sure. Before I decided to run, I knew it would be vicious, and I knew that that would be used. And I had a pretty comfortable life with my anonymity, as you would say. I told my story most places I go because I do a round of trying to encourage other women to get off the rolls of welfare, such as I was. I was a welfare food stamp, single parent. Had to overcome that, went back to college. So I try to tell my story throughout that district and to other people that found themselves in the position I was in to inspire them and give them hope. I knew that would come out. And when I did, when I thought about it, I said, this is going to be a story of an overcomer. A story need to be told. I'm not ashamed of who I was. I mean, it's unbecoming, but I knew who I am today. I knew my value. See, I'm a Christian also. So I spoke with my pastor and through Christ, who is a redeemer and a restorer, I forgave myself. So it didn't matter how many times it was on the news. It didn't matter how many times it was on the radio. Sure, a lot of people that don't know me said, how could they let a convicted felon? Well, you know, any of us could have a brush with the law and become convicted, or adjudication with hell. Somebody has a cousin like Regina Hill. Somebody has a mother like Regina Hill. Somebody has a brother or sister that had issues with the law like myself. So I would implore them to be forgiven. I was forgiven. I paid my dues to society. And with that baggage, I'm helping others. And that's the key. It's not. If you sit and squalor in your mess, is what you do with it.
And when you talk about, you know, trying to inspire people to not be dependent on welfare, food stamps, and the like, I mean, if you're in a community where the average income is $13,000, that's a big ask.
You're gonna gravitate towards crime because you want to survive, such as myself, or you see how the haves live, and you want a piece of that, but you don't have the avenue to go about getting it because you don't have an education. So you can't get a $50,000 or $60,000 a year job. You only can get a $6 an hour job. So either you're going to, and I just tell you, either you're, as a young lady, you're going to choose the wrong boyfriend or mate. Single households are prevalent there because, you know, you're looking for someone to love you. Because it knows most times you're coming from a generation of single parents. It's just a vicious cycle.
Are you worried, though, that, you know, with these new venues coming in, are they going to provide the kind of good jobs that are going to really lift up the community? Or are they going to be the kind of service jobs, you know, the jobs which don't pay as well that aren't going to help?
Well, anything helps. You know, anything helps. Right now, there's nothing. Right now, you have people sitting at home. Wondering, and that's throughout the city, that's throughout the county, unemployed, that's throughout the nation, unemployment is at its highs. So I do want to encourage, and what I'm trying to do is encourage the people of my district and throughout the city, take something, because when I started my journey off of welfare, I took a job at the older Amway Center. It had just came up out the ground. And that was my first job off of welfare, working in the kitchen, which offered me about $6.25 an hour. And now here I sit today. So I don't want people to say, well, it doesn't. And I hear it often. I'm not making $12 an hour, so I'm not going to work. No, you got to start somewhere. And I have spoken with Orlando Magic, like I said, in the venues package over at the stadium. So most of those jobs are going to be year-round jobs because, yes, I don't need people having temporary jobs, and then after the job's finished, they're right back where they started from. And through those jobs, like I stated earlier, I'm hoping that we have apprenticeship programs there on those very sites, like work experience programs, where people are now getting transferable skills. We have electricians and plumbers that's going to come out of there. We're going to have data processors because there's going to be 250 jobs. This is at the stadium that's being built, 850 skilled jobs that they've promised the District 5 residents, and 250 jobs that are in our office jobs. So I'm hopeful. I call me an optimist. You know, that's how I got here because they said it couldn't be done. So I'm not one to think that nothing's impossible. All things are possible. And hopefully we can connect with not just those venues, but there's other businesses throughout Orange County and throughout the city that I hope to connect with, to where we can give incentives to these businesses, tax breaks maybe, to when they hire a convicted felon, to where they hire someone throughout the district so now they can become empowered. Now they start getting a skill or a trade or putting food on their table and find their value. Because when you're sitting home on welfare or unemployed, you feel as if, you know, you don't matter. You feel unvalued, even within yourself, not what others think, because mm-hmm. we already know they think that you're just loafers and want to squeeze the system for every dime. And believe it or not, people that are on the system feel the same thing, that there's no hope for them. But then we create a system to where when the mothers and these single dads do go back to work, that they can't get certain services that welfare provides. Mm-hmm. So we got to make sure that we assist them with child care. We got to make sure that those dads, those and moms that on child support, that won't pay their child support, we don't put them in jail because they haven't paid. We don't take their license.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know this isn't a city issue. This is a state issue.
Sure.
But I hope to work with all of us are one in the same state and national, that we create programs to where we don't continue to beat people down because of them falling down.
I've been speaking to Commissioner-elect Regina Hill. She is the incoming commissioner for the City of Orlando's District 5. Regina, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you.
That was Orlando City Commissioner-elect Regina Hill. Up next, a conversation with 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. I'm joined by 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Dick Batchelor is a former Democratic State House representative. He's the founder and president of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Dick, thanks for coming along.
Hey, it's good to be here again. Thank you.
And Lou Fry, of course, a former Republican congressman. He's the founder of the Lou Fry Institute for Politics and Government at the University of Central Florida. Lou Fry, nice to see you again.
Good to speak to you.
The state legislature wrapped up the 2014 legislative session by passing a $77.1 billion budget. It's a pretty big one. Lou Fry, any surprises for you in that budget or in the legislative session?
I mean, truly, if you're looking for excitement, you're looking the wrong year in terms of it. It was rather well run. The Speaker in the House got to move the things along, got a lot of what they wanted in it. But it's nice to work, as Dick can tell you, it's much better to work from a surplus than from a minus. And we're playing catch up a little bit. I think we went $2 billion in the hole a couple of years ago, and now we're paying some of it back. And I'm not so sure now how well it's working, because I'm not so sure where the polls are. I know we'll talk about them later, but all is not good on the horizon.
Mm-hmm. Dick Batchelor, do you concur with Lou Fry? Good to have a boring session, so to speak?
Well, the first thing is, and Lou's alluded to it too, is you've got a surplus, which they had, almost a $2 billion surplus, and you can go back and fund some things you did not fund. Child welfare got funded. Not all of the child protection workers that the governor wanted got funding, but quite a few did. Education got some funding for the first time in the university system for public capital outlay. But in K-12, the education funding was higher, but it's still lower than it was in 2009, so I applaud them for increasing the K-12 funding. I can't applaud them. One thing that really fascinated me, though, is you've got to say two things. One, immigration legislation coming out of the Republican legislature, both the House and the Senate, and medical marijuana. Those two things, if you had asked me 10 years ago, with the Republican legislature, deal with immigration, in-state tuition, and deal with medical marijuana, I would never thunk it, as they say.
How about poll-driven? I mean, the medical marijuana is sitting out
and,
there.
And the immigration issue, too. I mean, remember Rick Scott got elected saying he was opposed to in-state tuition, you know, for, quote, illegal immigrants. But now he came out and supported it and encouraged the Senate to do the right thing. And
for the Republicans, it was a rare chance to use common sense.
Well, it was on the medical marijuana. I think they saw the polls. The polls say that medical marijuana proposed constitutional amendment would pass by 80% of the vote, and say, get out in front of that.
And by the way, the medical marijuana was the only part of this whole session that had really raw emotion in it. That little girl, that was the only part of the 2 months or so forth that really just took you out of your seat, which I guess is both good and bad. Mm-hmm. It's good because it did accomplish something, and mm-hmm. hopefully it'll have a really good result.
Do you see any problems down the track, though? For example, what happened in California where you had some kind of difference between what the federal government was thinking and what the local, you know, the state government was thinking in terms of regulating the dispensaries?
I don't think so. In fact, unlike California, Florida's going to be extremely limited. They've identified 21 nurseries, but only 5 would be chosen to could actually grow the marijuana. You've got to be in business for like 30 years. You've got to have a $5 million bond.
Some in this area,
and the
though,
dispensaries are going to be, I think, only 5 dispensaries in the entire state, not like California with one on every street corner.
If you're one of the 5 dispensaries, I mean, that's kind of a
I went out to see one of them mm-hmm. because I used to represent the growers in that thing right above here in Apopka, all that area, and went out, had a chance to go out to see what they were and what they're planning and moving ahead and so forth. And it's pretty serious stuff, and the control of it's pretty serious. And I don't think it's going to be an open door. I think it's going to move that way, and who knows, 5 or 10 years from now, I would not be shocked if there was a bill put into to legalize it all with a fairly broad base.
Let me ask too, I mean, Lou Fry, you mentioned before it's kind of poll-driven, the push for allowing this. Do you think this takes the wind out of the sails of Charlie Crist a little bit?
I think that he's looking at the polls, and he's probably not too upset, and the governor's looking at the polls, and he's probably not overly happy. You have the newest results in, don't you? Are we?
Yeah, I mean, the recent polls show that Crist is ahead of Rick Scott, almost 10 points, that margin there, but, you know, there's still a bit of time between now and November.
Well, you've got other polls, too, that show him only ahead by 1 point. But one of the things, very quickly here, is that one of the arguments was that actually John Morgan was trying to get the medical marijuana initiative on the ballot to drive the voter turnout. So to that extent, he thought it would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing you're going to see is how strong the Scott people feel those polls are, because you're going to see the more of the money poured into it, and you're also going to see the severity of it coming up. Mm-hmm. But does it really get down and dirtier than it's been? And you don't have to look at the numbers. You just have to see who's doing what and which way they're interpreting the polls.
Mm-hmm. Dick Batchelor, rather, Charlie Crist is contemplating a trip to Cuba. This is something that he said he wouldn't have supported back when he was governor. What do you think this will do to the way people see him, voters?
Well, I'm somewhat perplexed. Whether it's polling data, I don't know what it is that's driving him, because if you're running for governor of the state of Florida, why would you interject a controversial issue, particularly when it deals with foreign policy and not domestic policy? So I don't know why he's doing it. I do remember that the last election, for the first time, you know, the Cuban vote, you know, by majority went to Barack Obama. So it's moving towards a Democratic area, but it's still a lot of people who have very strong sentiments about Cuban and recognizing Cuba. So I don't know why he would interject something controversial into his gubernatorial campaign.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm speaking with political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. You can join the conversation online. We're on Facebook and Twitter. You can also send us an email, intersection@wmfe.org. Let me segue to presidential politics. Speculation that Republicans are hoping that former Governor Jeb Bush will consider a 2016 presidential bid. Lou Fry, what are your thoughts?
I was in the middle of the Ford Reagan fight in 1975 and 76. I was in the Ford leadership, and two guys wanted to run, the governor of California and Ford.
Ronald Reagan.
And nobody would come out for it. And so we had a problem where we were going to the president and saying, Mr. President, are you going to run or not? Because if not, we're going to help Reagan. But if so, you got first crack at us. And finally, the president called me down to the White House and sat me down upstairs, which was always a bad sign, and pointed his finger at me and said, Lou, you know, you've been in the leadership. You got the space shuttle in Florida. You got it in your area. You got the military hospital we wanted and so forth. He said, I've earned your trust over the years, and I expect your help now, and I don't want any excuses for it. I went back to Reagan's people and said, look, I got probably a week. And if not, I'm going to go, and I'm going to be the Ford chairman in Florida, which I thought would shake him up a bit, and because he was running ahead at the time. Mm-hmm. And so he did. I became the Ford chairman. The Reagan people never forgave me for it. And the reason is, I found out some years after, when Jerry used to come down, we play golf or something once in a while, the reason was a pretty simple one. Reagan wanted the money from all the tremendous shows he was on, and I can't even remember the names of them, but he was the head of the many.
GE Theater.
GE Theater was the big one, all that. He wanted to wait till after the first of the year because all his money would come in at that point. Mm-hmm. And his staff couldn't do anything about it, and so I got caught in the middle of that one. I knew I was in the middle of it. I wasn't there because I was dumb. I was probably there because I was too damn good. but that is what you're looking at, and the reason I say it is, he's smart. Rubio's smart. What he wants to do is have the president, have Bush act or not act. And the longer he doesn't do anything, the weaker he looks. And mm-hmm. that breach, if there is a breach, if it's handled that way, is one that is not going to be really liked by the Bush people.
Do you? Is that the two kind of top contenders at this point, do you think?
I don't know who else wants to run. I have been searching vainly for someone who wants to be president as a Republican. And I don't see him lining up. Dick, maybe you've got him hidden.
No, actually, I would love to give you Ted Cruz as my nominee for the Republican Party, or
I'm
Rand
sure you
Paul,
would.
But it wouldn't happen. Lou makes a very good point, too. That is the power of the White House. When you get summoned to the White House by the President of the United States and say, remember, I did these things for you, we call that, it's like a political prayer meeting. You understand when you left the White House, so that's one. Point two on the race with Jeb Bush, I think Jeb is doing all the right things. I mean, he's a great speaker. He's out for immigration reform now. He took a position on Common Core. The interesting thing, though, is that Marco Rubio started out on immigration. Tea Party went after him. He's kind of rescinded his activities on behalf of immigration reform. Jeb Bush has written a book on immigration reform, a very good book, by the way. I would suggest you read it. And then he's opposed to Common Core. Marco Rubio is. So it's interesting. But actually, Jeb Bush is Marco Rubio's mentor. So it's going to be very interesting to have two people from Florida try to get in the race and compete for the same base of money.
It's a disaster.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, that's really, truly what you're looking at. And again, the quicker the Republicans can solve this, at least as far as Bush and Rubio go, the better it is going to be.
Lou Frey, when you say it's a disaster, do you mean just for the Republican Party? I mean, do you think would you say for the country if
well, I think, yeah, I think, I hope each time but we have two people or three or four of character running for the office, and you can put it down and get your pick. The Republicans in Florida are really key because we're the third state. We carry a lot of impact. If you don't carry Florida, you're probably not going to win. So it goes beyond just the borders of Florida.
Let me just ask one more quick question. Dick Batchelor, you mentioned a couple of things there, Common Core and immigration. What about climate change? Marco Rubio making some comments there saying that, he's not a scientist. He said that before, but he doesn't believe legislation can help reduce climate change or even that it's influenced by the activities of humankind. What do you make of that?
Sophomoric. I was surprised. I think what happened, he's under the ether and then he kind of disappeared for a while, but he's now back being talked about as a presidential timber. And I think what he said on climate change, that the humans contribute nothing to climate change, including coal, et cetera. So I think he's way off on that mark there. He's kind of pushing himself even further to the right on that issue. And frankly, I thought he was very prattle the way he attacked Hillary Clinton today on her job as Secretary of State. She's gotten great recognition for her job as Secretary of State, but him attacking her, I just thought was childhood stuff.
I've been speaking to Lou Frey and Dick Batchelor. Lou Frey, former Republican congressman. He's an attorney at Lowndes, Drostick, Doster, Kander and Reed. And, of course, he's the founder of the Lou Frey Institute for Politics and Government at UCF. Lou Frey, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Dick Batchelor is a former Democratic State House representative and head of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Dick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
The conversation continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is the assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.